This podcast contains descriptions of alcohol and drug abuse, sexual assault, adult themes, violence, and explicit language. Listener discretion is advised. On June 3rd, 2011, a young woman named Lauren Spear disappeared after a night out with friends at Indiana University, never to be seen again. As a fellow IU student who grew up with similar circumstances, her story has haunted me. There were so many nights my friends and I could have ended up like her. This is the story about what happened that fateful night at a historic university and a quaint Midwest town with a hidden dark side. This is Finding Lauren. Indiana University was like something out of a movie. It was idyllic. The type of school they based stories on. Literally a modern-day Animal House or Van Wilder. I had just transferred there following my freshman year at the University of Maryland after falling in love with the campus when visiting some friends the previous spring. Indiana had this certain warmth that was hard to explain. It's just something you felt when you were there. Coming from New York City and growing up without much of a suburban beat made this school all the more appealing. I wanted something the complete opposite of what I grew up in. To me, this was college. This was exactly the place I could have dreamed of. Sports, Greek life, living in the Midwest with access to friends at other big schools just driving distance away. Of course, the education was amazing as well, but admittedly, my focus was more on the overall experience. To this date, I have so many incredible memories. A mix of red brick and white stone buildings make up the campus. Large art installations and statues were positioned across the quad. Students walked together in groups and rode their bikes. And just outside the campus, the area of downtown Bloomington was quaint, or so it seemed. A combination of new apartment buildings to house the students and some old pastel-colored houses lined the streets. In hindsight, what seemed so picturesque at first glance had an odor of something foul lurking just beneath the surface.
I went and visited, and it was beautiful, big campus, like what you see in the movies, which is what totally drew me to it. I spent a weekend there, and I had a ton of fun. I went with a few of my friends, and it was college, like you see in the movies, to a T, and that's what I wanted. I went and got a great education, but I loved the social aspect that Indiana had to offer.
The campus itself was founded in 1820, so there were lots of old historic buildings nestled on the near 2,000 acres which made up the grounds. Where the campus sat was considered downtown Bloomington, most known for the iconic Sample Gates. The Sample Gates are two posts constructed of Indiana limestone, surrounded by a brick path that flows into campus with picturesque landscaping that changes each season. This is the image that usually pops up when you Google Indiana University. It's where people stand and take photos after graduation or on formal events when you're all dressed up. There is nothing like it that I've seen at other schools. The brick path that divides the Sample Gates also takes you down Kirkwood Avenue in the opposite direction. Kirkwood was a bustling avenue made up of all different types of restaurants, IU merchandise shops, and bars. Many, many bars. And each bar had its reason to go there. Because of the vast student population and many with money to spend from their parents, Bloomington was nationally ranked for having some of the best bars in the country. Kilroy's Bar and Grill, a popular chain based in Indianapolis, owned three tributary locations in Bloomington: Kilroy's on Kirkwood, Kilroy's Dunkirk, and Kilroy's Sports Bar. These were arguably the number one spots out of the 20-something bars home to IU. There was such a wide variety of bars that we did bar crawls all the time. There was so much to offer in the small area of downtown Bloomington that you hardly ever left. Kilroy's on Kirkwood was a known favorite of IU students. It was the chill weekday or daytime spot, but really there were always people there. On a Monday night, you could find this place pleasantly slammed thanks to $1 well shots. A few doors down was Kilroy's Dunkirk, another popular spot where many DJs and other live music performances happened. You could also get these crazy blue drinks that tasted like gasoline until your second sip, where you stopped tasting or feeling anything. Across the street from Dunkirk was Nick's English Hut, a preferred spot to pregame before basketball games. We'd play the infamous drinking game Sink the Biz and order a side of Old Bay seasoned French fries. As you continued down Kirkwood to 7th Street, you'd eventually turn right at the Monroe County Public Library and head towards the other area of downtown where many off-campus apartments were located, as well as some other bars. Walnut was the popular street where the mecca of all college bars, Kilroy Sports Bar, better known as Sports, was located. Sports to this day is one of the craziest bars I have ever stepped foot in. Imagine a two-floor brick building taking up a full square block consisting of multiple indoor and outdoor bars, a fake beach out front in the summertime, and a dance floor with bottle service upstairs known as the Jungle.
I mean, we went out almost every night. Like, I looking back, I feel like I had class Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You had to have off on Thursday, Fridays, because, like, we had to go out.
Fridays.
So it was 3 days a week. And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we went out.
No lack of partying.
No lack of partying. If you had a Friday class, you were screwed. Like, it would ruin your year. Like, your semester. Right. We would go, and I'd bring my biggest bag that I had for going out, and we'd get like a round of shots, and I would just swing them all into my bag after, like, still filled with alcohol, and my bag was always destroyed. But I kid you not, I think I have like 80 shot glasses. They were so easy because they weren't full shots. So they, whatever it was, and you just throw them back like shot after shot. It was like the perfect amount.
Sports was the place you wanted to go and spend your nights. There were TVs everywhere to watch a big game, different types of music playing from all the different rooms, and there was a popcorn machine and a barbecue stand out back where you could get pulled pork and Lay's Ruffle chips before stumbling on home. Kilroy Sports Bar is located in the heart of downtown Bloomington on 8th and Walnut, just a block away from the Smallwood apartment building where Lauren Spearer lived. This is also the bar she went to the night she disappeared. Another IU hangout spot was the Quarry, essentially a man-made pit where stone or rock is extracted, leaving cool, fresh water that has become a symbol of Bloomington and a highly sought-after hangout. This was also inspired by Dennis Quaid in the iconic movie Breaking Away. The reasons that it was very inviting were also reasons it was dangerous. There were no lifeguards, and you're hanging out with your friends drinking alcohol all day perched on a cliff, so accidents are bound to happen. Not to mention having to trespass through private property to get there. Quarry jumping from the rooftop quarry, a 65-foot ledge, was considered a rite of passage for an IU student. Three people have died jumping from the quarry's ledges over the past 25 years from either the impact of the water or colliding with a rock. After years of extreme concern from area residents, as of February 2020, it has since been filled in. A resident of the wooded area that surrounded the quarry reported to Indiana Public Media saying, "It got to the point where there would be 300 people back there on a given weekend. A lot of them were drinking. They would also four-wheel back there at 2 in the morning and come on all days, all times of the day and night." On some other occasions, groups of kids would organize boat days on the nearby Lake Monroe. I only went on boats two or three times in my college experience, but some people lived for boats. It was like one person would just decide, okay, we're doing boats today, and hundreds of students would show up and congregate on double-decker pontoon boats for a long day of partying. Cases of plastic-handled vodka, drugs, and speaker systems would always be on the front lines. Some of the boats had water slides, so everyone was sliding into the water and attempting to swim drunk. People were jumping across each boat and falling through the middle. I even remember this one time, an overcrowded boat flipped over and I received what seemed like a million Snapchats of drunk friends flailing in the water like a scene out of the end of Titanic. After Lauren went missing, you'd hear people making jokes that she was somewhere in the lake or the quarry, She was everywhere and nowhere at the same time. As I'm sure you've picked up, Indiana University was notorious for being a party school with a thriving social life. It was the perfect mix of sports and Greek life, a Big Ten school historic for their basketball team, and so many of the school's proudest moments surrounded sports. And although the football team isn't the best in the division, many of the students proudly supported the mentality of never losing a tailgate, a classic IU party slogan.
From other schools that we visited, Indiana was by far the best, I thought the best.
Do you really think so?
Like, I actually think so. Yeah.
I think so.
We had fields on fields. We would literally go from car to car. I remember I would be drinking and everyone had their families there barbecuing. Like, you could just pick up a random hot dog and then, like, continue about your day, like, drinking. And everyone was so, it was just so fun. Like, the fields were acres on acres of just people partying and eating. And
just those whole weekends where, you know, people would come visit us or, and it would just be a whole weekend of.
We'd plan it out. It was like, okay, you need to come when there's a tailgate because you need to experience
the whole experience of dressing up and the camaraderie. And it's like,
they don't have no fields anymore.
We couldn't go to the fields.
Why'd they do that?
People were just getting too fucked up.
Yeah, too many drinking tickets probably. Like,
was that why? Yeah.
I think so.
I don't think they do field tailgates anymore, actually. I just remembered.
Yeah. I think we would just wake up pregame.
At, like, literally 6 a.m.
Yeah.
I'd set my alarm for 6, and we'd go get bagels, and I would chase my tequila with a bagel and an orange juice.
There was also the iconic Little 500 bike race every spring, modeled after the Indy 500 race, in which fraternities and sororities biked 500 laps around a track. Houses would train all year for this race, and it was a huge honor to participate and to win. But that one race equated to a week long of heavy partying and crazy events. Little 500 especially was a wild time for the students as graduation was nearing and the weather was warm. We'd have high profile DJs and rappers come to the school to perform because there was such a demand for entertainment. I recall seeing artists like Lil Wayne, John Legend, Mac Miller, and Wiz Khalifa, just to name a few. Because of all the things happening socially, aside from the drinking, drug use was extreme on campus. Between cocaine, Xanax, ecstasy, marijuana, and prescription pain pills, there was no shortage of supply if you were looking for it. This is a common occurrence at many schools, especially in the Midwest, but it was routine for a majority of students at IU and something that cannot be neglected in this story. Whether you'd like to dabble or fully indulge, it was just a part of the experience. We were all young once and more often than not probably have a story about that one crazy night partying, but many people speculate that Lauren was quite fond of this lifestyle and her engagement with drugs and drinking could have played a role in her disappearance. That maybe she went too far. It is known that on the night of her disappearance, she had been drinking heavily and had also snorted an anti-anxiety medication, Klonopin, as well as possibly cocaine.
We were so young. Like, it was our first time in a big school without anyone watching us and telling us what to do. And I think when you're a freshman, it's really, like, it's fun, but it's also you're testing your limits of, like, how much you can drink. I remember, like, a few girls always took, like, Xanax before we would go out. Thinking about doing, like, taking Xanax and drinking, like, you get blackout. You don't even know. But we always somehow, like, were fine. It became less and less of a big deal. I think when I first got to school, the fact that, like, I would have a girlfriend that would go and take a snort a Xanax and drink, like, at first I was just like, that's so crazy. But then eventually, like, yeah, it was normal, and you didn't have to. It wasn't like people were pressured into it, but the more fucked up you got, the more fun of a night it was, because it's crowded, everyone else is drunk. Like, you can't be in that scene and be sober. But I think that Indiana definitely, like, the kids there did a lot more drugs because we're not known for, like, being a great academic school, I guess, unless you're in Kelly. At least that's what I thought, but...
Ever since Lauren Spearer went missing, there was a change in the school. They began to crack down on underage drinking and drug use that was first nature to the students. Campus security and Bloomington police began employing undercover cops to wait at the bars, ready to write drinking tickets or take away fake IDs in hopes of protecting the student body. They'd also wait in the crowds at concerts or other events dressed inconspicuously and arrest students smoking weed. The number of friends I've had who have spent nights in the drunk tank or have been cited for underage intoxication or possession of narcotics seemed to grow by the day. I have even fallen victim to getting a fake ID taken away. A sad moment, I must say. We used to try our best to style our hair and makeup to match the person in the photo and make sure that we had all the information memorized. During the pre-games, we'd often quiz each other on dates of birth and addresses to make our entry as seamless as possible, knowing the bars had become extremely strict.
The cops would just be standing outside of sports.
Yeah.
Literally. I remember, like, there was one night where we still tried to get in. I think it was sophomore year. But, like, four of us at once got drinking tickets, and I had to take like an alcohol class after. So when you came to school, everything changed because it was after Lauren, and they had to, I don't know if it was because she was at sports, they were under extra scrutiny, and they got in a lot of trouble.
Before Lauren Spearer disappeared, the campus had been a free-for-all. Now, everything changed, and it was weird. The hypervigilance about safety following the Spearer saga was felt, but at the same time, the party scene intensified. In fact, 2 years later, in 2013, another student, 19-year-old Rachel Feig, fell down the stairs after a drunken night at her first college party and died. She never even made it to her first class. This is what I mean by this intense level of partying. It was normal. These were nights where we felt invincible. At the time of Lauren's disappearance, school was not in session. Bloomington becomes a ghost town. As mentioned, the spring semester ends in early May, but many students, including myself, stay for 4, 6, or 8 week sessions of summer school. And when the students leave, you feel this shift of energy, like that the town is actually quite dismal and desolate. It's like the rose-colored glasses come off and you become more aware of every little detail outside the student population. Specifically the locals. I remember the summer that I stayed, walking around some seedier areas of downtown Bloomington, often feeling like I was being watched or judged. Never truly unsafe, but more so aware of the discrepancies between those who lived there and those who flocked there. The locals were aware too. There was a very clear dichotomy. Even though the school and students were responsible for bringing economic stability and jobs into the area, you could sense that there was a distaste for IU students. I'm sure they thought that we were entitled and annoying, running around like Bloomington was our playground. And it was. Drunk and wreaking havoc at night while during the day speeding around town in a Mercedes or Audi sponsored by mom and dad, acting as if everything was disposable and we could do whatever we wanted. I don't even think we realized the privilege we exuded and how that might look to someone else. It's also important to understand the geography of the land. This is a relevant piece of the puzzle when it comes to the theories of what happened that fateful night. The surrounding towns like Martinsville, Indiana, which is just 30 minutes north of Bloomington, has one of the highest crime rates in the state. I always felt like, as a student from the East Coast, I stuck out like a sore thumb. Times where I'd show my New York ID buying alcohol, I was always hit with some sort of remark like, "New York, huh? Must be pretty different over here." I'd smile and force a laugh and say something along the lines of, "Yes, a nice change of pace." I purposely wouldn't wear anything ostentatious, but I think that out-of-state students, and New Yorkers specifically, carry a certain energy. Especially after Lauren's disappearance, it felt like there was another dividing factor between us and them. Everyone was aware of what happened. They couldn't not be, with posters of her beautiful, full face everywhere you turned. But I do feel like it further drove a wedge between the locals and the out-of-state residents because there was no resolve. The locals kind of had this attitude like, here are these students always messing a good thing up. It seemed like everyone was on edge.
They thought that we came to this little town and like that we are like these rich, like New York, stuck up, spoiled kids. I definitely felt that vibe, yeah. I remember my dad came in and he drove to Indiana and he had his obviously New York license plate and a cop was behind him and he was trying to parallel park like into a spot and the cop like wouldn't let him into the spot. I don't know why, like there was no reason for it. But my dad was just like, I don't understand. He ended up saying like, hello, can you like let me in? And the cop was like, oh. I feel like they just like had it out for us sometimes.
Whether Lauren's disappearance was an accident or not, there was never a doubt in my mind that drugs were involved. As mentioned, the Bloomington Police Department reported having found a small amount of cocaine in her apartment shortly after she disappeared. But more than just what Lauren was involved with, there was a very concentrated amount of drug users in the Bloomington area that were not just students. There was also this trend of chronic homelessness that had been increasing in Bloomington over the last few years. The U.S. Census reported in 2019 that there were about 85,000 residents in Bloomington, but the median age was 23 with a 37.5% poverty rate. This means the majority of its residents were actually students, not making any money, and probably didn't live in Bloomington full time. This is why when summer session hit and so many people left and the rah-rah energy went away, you got a glimpse into what the town would be without its students. A dingy, dismal kind of place. In 2019, it was reported that Monroe County, which is the county that Bloomington is located in, had close to 250 homeless adults, and many of them were abusing drugs, specifically opioids. It became standard walking around downtown Bloomington, especially in the alleys behind different bars, to stumble upon used needles and small empty drug baggies. The combination of drug use and homelessness unfortunately opened the floodgates for a variety of nefarious and unpredictable characters to be present around campus. In 2011, the Bloomington Herald Times reported that there were 111 jailed homeless individuals for a variety of crimes. Stealing alcohol from Kroger, panhandling on busy sidewalks, or more severely, running methamphetamine labs along the B-line bus trail. On July 22, 2012, a homeless man was stabbed in the back on Kirkwood Avenue for items in his grocery cart. It put things in perspective for us to think that just outside our little bubble was so much depression. According to Laura Lane, author of This Is Opioid Addiction, a Herald Times special report, the opioid black market thrives in Bloomington. The prominence of Greek life at Indiana University cultivates a party culture that leads students to be more susceptible to drug use. Students in Greek life are generally more willing to try drugs, making them a desired target population for drug dealers. Currently at IU, there are numerous fraternities and sororities that are involved in either buying or selling in the illicit drug markets, and that creates high demand. The increase in demand results in an increase in suppliers, which creates a vicious cycle of bringing drugs into the area.
One year I worked at a homeless shelter, and they were all like really, really sweet. It's sad. Most of the school obviously brings in the money, but around it, it's a lot of poor people.
That summer, like going back to what you said about Bloomington being this cute little bubble town, is exactly what I thought it was. But then when Lauren went missing and we would search for her, I honestly didn't even realize how much bigger Bloomington is and like the outskirts of the town. And you have IU and the little town, but then outside of it is just homeless people and trailer park and like nothing like what's in the town. Just, I don't even know how to explain it. Dangerous, honestly. After I saw that coming back, I was like, oh, maybe this isn't so safe here.
There was a rundown strip club on Walnut Street, just north of where Sports is located, called Night Moves. It was a running joke among out-of-state students. It was the only strip club in Bloomington and attracted some interesting characters. I never went there myself, but heard of groups of boys headed over there for essentially a late-night laugh on weekends. They described it as resembling a low-end bowling alley with beaten-up black leather booths and glow-in-the-dark shapes on the carpet. They'd also report that there were some really thirsty guys there as well. Night Moves, which refers to itself as the premier Southern Indiana gentleman's club, is open daily until 3 a.m. and stands out as a breeding ground for predators. Maybe one who might have stumbled upon Lauren early that morning. This is why, in the case of Lauren's disappearance, a lot of people do believe in the theory of random abduction. Bloomington was crawling with predators. Knowing the rampant drug use by locals and the homeless, as well as the fact that there were 150 registered sex offenders in the area at the time of her disappearance, makes this a hard angle to ignore. On the other hand, according to Reuters, an average of 350 people under the age of 21 have been abducted by strangers in the United States per year since 2010. This alludes to the fact that more often than not, if someone is abducted, it's most often by someone who knows them.
But whatever, so we went to the mall and we're waiting for the bus to go back to Bloomington. And there's this young guy, probably like 30s, and he's masturbating at the bus stop. And I was like, is he doing like what I think he's doing? And we were so immature, so we were obviously laughing, which was wrong, but we were. And we still got on the bus with this guy. So we look back, he's still masturbating in the back of the bus. And we're like, whatever, we forgot about him. And I turn around and he's like a little bit closer. And then I forgot about him again, I guess. I don't know. And we're talking, blah, blah, blah. And I feel someone's hand come. So we're on the bus and I'm sitting in the window seat. And I feel someone's hand come and grab my boob. And I squealed so loud. Like, and I turn around and there he is right behind me, still pleasuring himself, and grabbed my boob. And I was so shocked. Like, nothing like that has ever happened to me. I didn't even know what to say. So I just screamed and looked at him, and we got off the bus. It was way before we even got back to campus. But I was like, we're walking the rest of the way. I never called the cops. I should have. I just was so stunned. Like, I don't know. I didn't know what to do. That's like,
so one of our friends freshman year, she was in her boyfriend's room, and all of a sudden through a window, a homeless man came through the window into her bed. Didn't like do anything to her, but it affected her so much that she had to leave school for like a few weeks. And I remember that being like really, really upsetting. But it became normal to like see them around everywhere. There was a lot of homeless men that would just lurk and be there.
When Lauren Spearer went missing, she wasn't the only student in the history of Indiana to have suffered such a fate. In the year 2000, a 19-year-old IU freshman, Jill Berman, went on a bike ride and never returned. Very similarly to Lauren, Berman was last seen on May 31st, 2000 in the early summer. The investigation was led by Lieutenant Bill Parker of the Bloomington Police, the same detective who'd later be in charge of the Spearer case. The Bloomington police found Jill's bike a few days later, but it would not be until 3 years after her disappearance that they would find her remains. Like Lauren, there was a widespread search in the weeks after she went missing with a circus of media attention. There were several false leads that the police explored and many false confessions or recanting of statements from jail inmates and other unreliable sources. When her body was eventually found, there wasn't much compelling evidence, but the Bloomington police managed to hone in on a suspect, John Myers, who was arrested and charged with her murder. This conviction did not come without its own challenges. Myers spent years trying to get a new trial, arguing that his counsel was ineffective and violated his Sixth Amendment rights by presenting false testimony. Though initially sentenced to 65 years in prison, there is now a possibility for this potential felon to be either released from custody or have his trial retried. In 2010, a 29-year-old woman from Bloomington, Indiana, named Crystal Grubb was found dead. Monroe County investigators say prior to her death, Crystal was making methamphetamine on the banks of Bean Blossom Creek, just 30 minutes outside of the IU campus, in the company of her boyfriend and two other men. Crystal was reported missing and was found 13 days later abandoned in a cornfield. She had been strangled to death. To no surprise, there have not been any charges made in connection with her death, and today, there is still no closure on what happened other than the fact that drugs were involved. Every year, Crystal's mother, Janice Grubb, hosts a memory walk on the anniversary of her death. The Daily Herald reported that Janice does so not to seek justice for her daughter's case, but for other families whose daughters have been met with tragic and mysterious ends. Janice also told the Daily Herald that she had not heard from the Monroe County Sheriff's Department in months. Crystal Grubb's death is another example of a poorly handled investigation in the Bloomington area where drugs are involved. I walked the campus and surrounding areas many times alone after Lauren's disappearance without giving it too much thought, even nights when I definitely shouldn't have. Having grown up in New York City, I figured I had been exposed to or seen the worst, and if I could handle myself there, I'd be fine in Bloomington. There were a few cab companies that you could call around town, but they often took such a long time and were unreliable. Or, a lot of times, another group of drunk students would steal your ride. This was before Uber, so calling a cab company often meant waiting around, hoping they'd arrive in the window they promised. That also meant you had to have a charged phone and be ready with cash. This was more of an issue I dealt with once I moved into the sorority house, which was about a mile away from sports. Because of all these factors, sometimes I'd try and find one of my friends' off-campus apartments to sleep over at, or I'd just say screw it and walk. Danger lurking around Bloomington is not new, and a very plausible reason for why Lauren is not with us today. We all knew that there were weird people around us, just sometimes things would not be as apparent during the normal activities and distractions of school life. In 2015, we learned of the brutal death of 22-year-old IU senior Hannah Wilson. Hannah was just 2 weeks shy of graduating. After a night out partying with friends during Little 500, she was last seen leaving sports after her friends put her in a cab home, deciding she was too drunk to stay out. Surveillance footage captured a Kia Sportage trailing behind the taxi that carried Hannah home from the bar. The driver of the Kia Sportage was Daniel Messel. Hannah's roommate later testified that she heard the front door open at around 1 a.m. but never close. Hannah Wilson, who was from Fishers, Indiana, was found on April 24, 2015, beaten to death in an isolated rural area of Brown County. When her body was found, nestled below her feet was a cell phone that police later determined belonged to 50-year-old Daniel Messel. Hannah fought for her life, and Daniel Messel became sloppy as a result, leaving behind his phone. The evidence against Messel mounted after investigators showed up at his father's home and found him with a bag of bloody clothes. I remember hearing from a younger student who was still at IU at the time that Messel had spent his night at a nearby bar next to sports, spotted Hannah leaving, and followed her home. As she got out of the cab, he trailed behind her and walked into her house. He bludgeoned her over the head, brought her into his car, and ultimately drove her into a field where he beat her to death. I was shocked when I heard the news about Hannah. My first thought was, oh my God, not again. And my second thought was of Lauren and if this could be related. A lot of people drew the same connection. Hearing this struck a nerve because at the time, Lauren had been missing for 4 years with no answers. I was hopeful that maybe the two were related and maybe Lauren's family could have justice. It was also truly disturbing to think that within a short time, such heinous incidents occurred in a place that seemed so safe and so perfect. While investigating Hannah Wilson's murder, the prosecutor assigned to the case, Ted Adams, learned of the eerily similar details to Lauren's disappearance. Adams said he also discovered 5 women claiming they were harassed and in one case sexually assaulted by Messel during the summer and fall of 2012. It was also reported that Messel had a page out on a sugar daddy website in which he claimed to be looking for that quote-unquote special IU co-ed. In reality, Messel was a 50-year-old man living in a trailer with his father and preying on vulnerable college students in what has been described as his danger zone. According to Adams, the danger zone spans from Walnut Street, the avenue where Kilroy Sports Bar is located, and extends as far east as Dunn Street. The northern limit would be 10th Street, and the southern limit would be Kirkwood. Lauren's disappearance is consistent with Daniel Messel's danger zone. In September 2016, Messel was sentenced to 60 years in prison for Hannah Wilson's murder, plus 20 years as a habitual criminal offender. Then, in April 2018, Messel was given an additional 15-year sentence after he pleaded guilty to battery, resulting in a bodily injury in an unrelated 2012 case involving another 22-year-old Indiana University student who told police that Messel abducted, beat, and sexually assaulted her. In 2015, there was also another suspicious death with an IU student, but this time it was a young African-American male, Joseph Smedley, who was a member of IU Greek Life. The 20-year-old was reported missing on September 28, 2015, by his older sister Vivian after he failed to show up for a meeting. She then received odd text messages purportedly from Joseph saying he was going, quote-unquote, out of the country. Joseph's roommates reportedly found all of his belongings in his room, along with a handwritten note that his family says doesn't match his handwriting. On October 2, 2015, Joseph's body was pulled from Griffey Lake, which is about a 45-minute walk from the IU campus in Bloomington, with a backpack full of rocks. The coroners, as well as the Bloomington police, ultimately ruled it a suicide and stilled the reports, but the family was never satisfied with this conclusion due to questionable evidence and so many loose ends. News 13 reported that Joseph's father repeatedly questioned investigators, saying, "Does it make sense to you that somebody that supposedly wants to commit suicide would roam around in the woods, in the dark, put a backpack on, pick up rocks to weigh themselves down, and then jump off into a lake that has the average depth of 3 feet?" The coroner's report was never released to the public, but the autopsy showed Joseph had both THC and alcohol in his system. His sister Vivian said she later learned through reading the coroner's report that the backpack found strapped to his chest had somewhere between 62 and 66 pounds of rocks. Vivian Smedley said to News 13, "Every specialist I've reached out to said the same thing. They don't understand why it's a suicide. The last people who he was with were his fraternity brothers, so I definitely believe that they know something." As of July 2020, more than 80,000 signatures were signed in a petition to reopen and re-examine this case. His sister continued to state that it could have been accidental or it could have been suicide, but the unwillingness for the Bloomington police to further investigate and be vocal about this incident is what is so strange here. Also, there was a significant amount of hazing and bullying in the fraternities that ultimately led to many chapters being suspended. There was speculation that what happened to Joseph could have been related to that. That same week in 2015, there was another campus tragedy, the murder-suicide of a 21-year-old junior at Indiana University, Yaolin Wang, and her 20-year-old boyfriend, Xiaolin Zhao. Wang was found dead from apparent stab wounds the night of October 2nd in a common area inside the Stratum apartment complex. Police said they suspect Zhao died from apparent suicide by hanging after killing his girlfriend. The Indy Star reported that police believe Wang and Zhao had been in a relationship for about 6 months and lived together in the apartment building for about a month. Mark Land, a spokesperson for IU, said that Wang was a junior at IU, but Zhao was not a student. It was later revealed that Zhao was abusive and controlling, forcing his way into her life at college and moving into her apartment. His jealous and controlling nature ultimately ended in a murder-suicide. Though this was not a suspicious death, it further exemplifies this dark cloud that seemed to be lurking over Bloomington. Though none of these events are tied to each other, they're all important in telling the story of what was going on in Bloomington at the same time. At least in the case of Lauren, the murder-suicide of Wang and Zhao represents a love gone wrong, a jealous boyfriend who is driven to murder. Maybe that is some indication of what could have happened to Lauren. The case of Joseph Smedley proves how prevalent drugs and drinking were in all parts of campus, but also proves how lackadaisical the police department was in uncovering the truth. The sealing of the coroner's reports reminds me of how tight-lipped the police were in releasing any information about Lauren, even to her family. As for Hannah Wilson, the arrest of Daniel Messel and the unraveling of all of his crimes against women prove there were violent offenders walking among us. We constantly see a trend over and over of shielding information and crimes relating to drugs and passion. It makes me think, did Bloomington cause these people to break, or were they always on the border?
Hi, I'm Dr. Robin Stern. I'm the associate director and co-founder of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence, where we rest on decades of research that tell us that emotions matter. Emotions drive learning, decision-making, creativity, relationships, and health. And we at the center conduct research and teach people of all ages how to develop their emotional intelligence. I'm also a psychoanalyst in private practice with a special area of interest and expertise in working with young women. I've written a book called The Gaslight Effect, which details psychological abuse and manipulation. And over the years, I've had deep experience working with women who have found themselves unhappily in relationships where they've given up their own reality to sustain the relationship.
One of the things that is unique about especially early college experiences is that a couple of things. Here you are often on your own for the first time. And the independence, the thirst for independence that kids have, that many kids have when they're growing up, all of a sudden you've gotten it. You're on the college campus and you're on your own. And that's prized. You can't wait to have that. And despite the fact that it also comes with a lot of anxiety, when a trauma occurs on the college campus, such as what happened in the case that we're talking about, there's a way that people are destabilized because it's part of their community at a time where independence is supposed to be a good thing. And the way people experience it and process it is just different.
We know that people get to college campuses with varying degrees of excitement about being independent. It's a time where we're told that, wow, you're going to make your own decisions, you can create your own schedule, and that's really terrific. It's not so terrific for people who are not prepared to manage their time well, to manage the feelings that they may have when they have stretches of time alone. It's not so terrific for people who have depended on others to make their decisions their whole lives. In fact, most of us have depended to some degree or another on our families, on our parents, and maybe specifically on one parent. So we know that there's no preparation course to go to college, no course that teaches you the skills of emotional intelligence, and no course that really lets you know how difficult it can be to be on your own, meaning separated from the people you've counted on for the first time in your life. When we face a trauma or very stressful course of events or memory that's held in the culture of a school, it's hard to know how to manage that effectively and well when you haven't learned the skills of emotional intelligence and when you're not in the company of the social support that you've leaned on for years. So kids get to college and they may not have yet integrated into the social network that ultimately will be their safety net when they're facing this trauma. Well, certainly as a mom, I know when my kids went to college and as a psychologist and educator, I hope that all kids find friends and safe people to be with very soon after they get to the campus, because that is the number one thing in dealing with difficult situations, the number one pathway to resilience when you do face tough times in college or in any part of life, social support. One of the things that stands out about this night and about the experience of all the students is they were drinking. and some of them were taking drugs, perhaps. And we know that drinking alcohol makes it hard to think clearly and make good decisions. When you're drinking, the way you are thinking and feeling is exaggerated, distorted, not clear. And when that happens, you behave in ways that you might not behave were you not drinking. And the more you drink, the more alcohol will affect you, your thinking and your behavior. So I personally have not experienced Yale as a wild party school. And when I've asked people and done some reading about it, certainly Yale students know how to study hard and they know how to play hard. And there are parties. They have a great residential life at Yale where people enjoy celebrating with each other. Most Yale students are, I think the statistics are in recent surveys, about 70% of Yale students are pretty happy. And I think that that makes for students who find a lot of ways to hang out and celebrate and be kind of quirky and creative with each other and have a good time without doing wild parties, even though there may be some of those too. But what is interesting about Yale is that New Haven is not the best place to hang out in. And so most of what goes on at Yale goes on at Yale University. And so I think there's been a change in the last number of years that I've heard about where people stay more on the campus and they're not really necessarily just hanging out in town. I as a faculty member, would never walk alone at night in an area outside of the university.
In reliving my memories as a student while searching for new information and answers, it's become apparent that not everything is how it seems. I think about myself arriving to Indiana University on that first day, knowing the risks and knowing what I was getting myself into, but still convinced that everything would be fine, that nothing bad would ever happen to me, especially at a place like IU. I think back to how much I was drinking and going out and how much of a priority that was for my 20-year-old self. But it was for all of us, everyone who I was surrounded by. We didn't really think twice. We felt like champions the more we partied. I was so naive to think that everything would be just fine. I was also shocked to later find out about so many other incidents occurring around campus and how I had no idea. The school was that massive, and we were in our own worlds. Lauren probably never expected a place like IU that seemed so safe and so full of potential to end up being a dark rabbit hole. I know I didn't. On the next episode of Finding Lauren.
I don't trust people who want to help, but then all of a sudden subsequently retain attorneys to cover something or protect themselves. If you want to really find Lauren, you wouldn't have lawyers there.
Well, I mean, obviously, if it's connected to the person, the case winds up getting solved.
I don't see it. Their behavior was just not consistent with a group of people who had nothing to hide and wanted to help to the extent that they could possibly help. They maintain that they did, but their behavior indicates to the contrary.
Lauren Spear's case is still an open investigation. Anyone with information regarding her disappearance, please reach out to Bo Deedle and Associates. For updates from her family, follow the official Lauren Spearer updates page on Facebook. Finding Lauren is hosted and produced by me, Kira Breslin, edited by J. Cody Spellman, engineering and original music by Monty Weber, logo design by Josh Stauffer. Special thanks to USA Today Networks for use of media. For links to sources, clips, and more information, you can follow at Finding Lauren Podcast on Instagram.